Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. I'm excited today to welcome back SOM Films and SOM TV alumni Sabato Sagaria. He will be talking about reopening the incredible historic restaurant 1/5 in New York City and what it's like to be a restaurateur post-pandemic and in today's really, really competitive world of opening a restaurant. There's no place like New York where this is any harder. Before I talk to Sabato, I want to tell you, SOM TV has a very special offer to celebrate our James Beard Award nomination that was just announced last week. Our film, The Whole Animal, has been nominated for a James Beard Award. And for that, we want to give you 50% off an entire year of SOM TV. If you're not a subscriber, this is the time to do it. Go to SOMTV.com, use the code 50OFF, 50OFF, to get SOM TV for an entire year for $25. Hundreds and hundreds of hours on almost every topic you can imagine in wine, and lots of food content as well. So go to SOMTV.com and use 50OFF, 50OFF. Without further ado, my conversation with my friend, Sabato Sagaria. I am joined by one of my favorite people in the wine business, I guess restaurant business. Is that more what you are now? Sabato Sagaria, master SOM, master ping pong player, and an incredible dresser, if you're watching this on SOM TV. Sab, you know, when we were in New York, we were filming our last shots for Cup of Salvation and with you, and we had the pleasure of going into your new restaurant, 1/5, that you've opened up, reopened, I guess is the term. And I was so taken by not only the space, but the history and everything, and I wanted to have you on to talk about a number of things. New York City, the restaurant industry there, kind of where we are, and then also this incredible, very historic location. So thanks for joining me. It means a lot. Why don't you give a little background on 1/5, this restaurant, and kind of where it is in New York City so people can kind of get a grasp of it?
Sure. It's at 1/5, which is actually the address on 1/5 Avenue, right by Washington Square in Greenwich Village. And it was really kind of serendipitous how it came about and fell into our lap. And my partner in that is Mark Forgione and partners through Apres Cru Hospitality. And Mark has always loved restaurants really have bones to them and took a wrong turn one day and ended up going down the street and saw a, you know, for lease sign in the window. And this was kind of during quarantine times, you know, post COVID or during COVID, I guess. And he's always been drawn to restaurants that have bones, as have I, and places that have a lot of history behind them. And this was one that we knew had a lot of history to it, but until we started digging into it, I don't think I even realized the amount of history that was to be had and made it even more intriguing and more desirable for us to want to do something there.
Yeah, my favorite thing about New York City, aside from just walking and seeing so many amazing things when you're there, I try to walk everywhere in New York, is these little nooks and crannies. You go inside of a building and you can't believe that this room or this building or restaurant exists in this space when you look at it from the outside. When I walked in 1/5, first of all, I just want people listening and watching to know this, that they could have filmed scenes from The Godfather in this place. But at the same time, it's also very airy and open in a way that's not very characteristic of, they're either totally inside with no windows or they're totally windowed. And this is one of these unique spots that's wood paneled and just a gorgeous location. When was this restaurant started? Let's go through a little bit of the history, because this is an absolute must go to in New York City. This is not a sponsored pod. This is just me over an amazing place that I can't believe ended up in your hands.
Yeah, so it dates back to 1927, and it opened first as a hotel. And so I think that's why it has so much sort of grandeur in its stateliness from the outside, as well as from the inside. And I think in the 30s and 40s, it started to, they had the cafe and there was a cabaret and it didn't become a co-op, I believe, until around the mid 70s of it. So for oftentimes it was used as a hotel, and it had a place called the Number One Bar. And this is after Prohibition that opened, and supposedly they'd have people that were, you know, standing out on the streets of Fifth Avenue, welcoming back soldiers from World War II at that point in time, with martinis in their hand and very celebratory in that sense. So it was pretty neat to hear that. And then it became a co-op, and then a number of restaurants took that space prior. This is actually the third iteration of us calling it One Fifth. We wanted to be stewards of that space and had it named after that. So that's what stuck, and it served the restaurant well. So we wanted to pick up where they left off.
Well, let's take a step back for the COVID portion of this. Mm-hmm. So what is the state of restaurants in New York? I mean, I couldn't believe how alive it was just being there just a couple weeks ago or a week ago. I was honestly blown away. I kind of was expecting something not more dreary, but a little less vibrant. What's the state right now? And how is New York recovering from this? Because this directly goes into your story with One Fifth.
Yeah, New York, I think, feels really great. There are a little more ebbs and flows to business, I think, than there have been in the past. And I can't speak to other markets, but for us, you know, how people are working and working from home in the office, how that has changed, you know, or taking long weekends. So it's not as consistent. You can't really go right back to the playbook of how it was pre-pandemic, but it is great to see that vibrancy in the air and seeing people happy to be out in public and raising a glass and celebrating restaurants.
Let me ask you now, because I mean, you have done it all. You've sort of been a beverage manager, a wine director. You've opened and closed restaurants. I don't know, people listening may know you from the Somme movies or whatever, but Sabato, you have sort of become quickly one of the more important restaurateurs probably in the United States. I don't mean to blow smoke, but you really are somebody not to piss off. I know your mob connections, all of this. So what is the margin of having a restaurant in New York City? I cannot imagine that this is the easiest thing to do.
No, it's definitely not easy by any means. I think every market and restaurants, not to say it's easy in any market at all. You know, restaurants are a living, breathing thing, and they're like snowflakes. They're all a little bit different, and you know, different challenges go along with it. And you know,
you're not going to get off this easy.
I mean, there's anywhere from kind of, you're single digits up to, you know, mid to high teens into, you know, successful ones in the, 20 to mid 20 margins. And we can all only hope to be at that level consistently across the board. So it's really hard to say because there's so many factors that go into it, whether it be rent, labor, you know, those are, you know, that's right there. That's, you know, more than half of your, you know, probably half of your revenue goes right to that.
What's the success rate? So if you open up a restaurant, and yours would be, you know, slightly high end of a place, though it's not inaccessible at all. Your happy hour probably could be the best happy hour in New York, if anybody's in the city. but you know, what's the success rate? So you start a place like One Fifth or something of that level. I mean, I find this to be very daunting. Mm-hmm. How hard is it?
It definitely is, because I think, you know, for us, as we're going through this, and I can speak to this because we're living it right now, it's, you know, it's really, you open it up and everything's theoretical, and you hope that people are coming in as you had thought, and you hope that they're, you know, connecting with what, how you envisioned it. But you're great listeners. And along the way, you're adapting and you're modifying and you're adding, subtracting, and really just trying to tune it in, you know, to open up out of the box and be a smash hit. You know, there's some restaurants out there, and, you know, applaud them and admire them being able to do that. But most of the time, you have to tinker. And but that's also the fun about it. That's what allows us to evolve ideas and to collaborate and really listen to the guests and show them that we do listen. So that's part of hospitality.
Yeah. Well, you have to love this to do it. How long does it take to become maybe not profitable, but just neutral as a restaurant? Is it something where you started up and you're looking at 5 years, 2 years, 20 years? I mean, what is it like?
Most people's leases aren't that long, so they wouldn't be able to get that. So, I mean, I'd say our target is anywhere from, you know, depending on the restaurant, is it, you know, 3 to 9 months or so, something in between there, where you're kind of at a steady state with it. And it's probably like, you know, raising a child. They can't walk on their own right out of the gate. So you got to kind of teach them to walk, and you know, different parts, you know, accelerate quicker than others. And especially when you're multiple meal periods, or it's, you know, it's like a three-ring circus. Sometimes there are, you know, the bar, there's the restaurant, there's events, and, you know, it takes a while for all of them to really hit their stride or to get the word out about that. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so fascinated by the economics of how the hell you do it, and then once it starts working, how do you make it bigger? I mean, you're one of the few that know. Before we get into One Fifth's history, who is your sort of inspiration as a restaurateur? Who do you think is the person that you know? Kind of you think of like, man, this person did it the way I wish I could do it in my career.
Yeah, I mean, I did spend 4 years at Union Square Hospitality Group and working closely with Danny Meyer and his longtime partner Richard Crane. I think those are two people that I looked up to before I worked with them, and then also having been honored to work alongside them, really respect what they've been able to do over three plus generations or decades. I'm sorry, not generations.
maybe.
which is no easy feat. And so I think that's something that I look up to and aspire to what they've been able to do. And not only the number of restaurants they've opened, but the talent that has grown from those trees over the years.
Yeah, that's great. So with One Fifth, I mean, one of the cool things about going into the restaurant is the amount of history that's all over the walls. I mean, there are photos of Mick Jagger. There are photos of films that have been filmed in the area. Tell me a little bit about the things that have happened in that space and around that space, just to kind of give people an idea.
Sure. So when we got the space, I'd known that it was, very historic and had been there for quite some time. And so sort of went down the rabbit hole and we started looking at and understanding what was in there because we wanted a restaurant that was connected to the neighborhood. And as you started learning about we started to learn about Greenwich Village and, the music scene that happened in there with, Bob Dylan and, all these other great artists that just
this the 60s kind of thing?
About the 60s, yeah. How they got their start down the street was pretty interesting and how they used the space. And once you started kind of going down this rabbit hole, it would always just sort of pop up here and there. Like I remember scrolling through Instagram and there's a big artist community, obviously, in this area during the 60s and 70s. And there's a picture of Basquiat and Madonna and on Instagram. And it said that, I think Basquiat's sister, the first time she met Madonna was at One Fifth. And he introduced her as, I want you to be my friend, Madonna. She makes music. And that was the introduction that happened at One Fifth.
Jesus.
Jimi Hendrix used to stay there. Right down the street is the Electric Lady Studios. And I remember reading all, Jimi Hendrix's biography growing up and, realizing, okay, that's where this music was made. You mentioned Mick Jagger. Keith Richards lived in the building. Patti Smith lived in the building. There was a legend that when Keith Richards was being interviewed by the co-op to try and live there, they said, well, why did you want to live here? And he said, because my wife thought it was an address that I could remember, being 15th Avenue. And, so you hear things like that. And there's an amazing picture that we have from a photographer named Alan Tannenbaum that's on the wall. And it's from May 1st, 1975. And that day, Alan was shooting for, I think the newspaper was like the Soho Star, or something like that. And the Rolling Stones were having a press conference. So they met at the hotel down the street. And then all of a sudden they said, go outside. And around the corner comes this flatbed truck. And on the back are the Rolling Stones playing on a flatbed truck going down Fifth Avenue. And then they got in front of One Fifth and it stopped. And they started throwing out pieces of paper, photocopies of their tour schedule for the 1975 tour. And that there was no Twitter, there was no Instagram back then. That was just, a bunch of guys playing on the back of a flatbed truck and throwing paper into the streets. So
can you imagine kind of the Rolling Stones are just playing on a flatbed truck while you're like walking to work?
Yeah. Right.
Unbelievable. I mean, yeah. I can't even. So with all this history in mind, you have this building, you set up a plan. It seems like it's a much, focused on Italian food. Mm-hmm. You do the pasta and you do great Italian wines. Why did you come to do an Italian menu there? What was the thinking in making this that?
So Mark Forgione, our partner in there in the restaurant, is obviously Italian as well, and I think really speaks to the Italian roots. And when we look at that and you see sort of Italian heritage in New York, we wanted to make a restaurant that we call sort of New York with an Italian accent. And that's something that can draw from both cultures, but also has a sense of place to it as well. And so we kind of took that approach with the food. And then, you know, on the beverage side of things, having a wine list that draws from both Italy as well as North America, and grapes that are grown in both, but also grapes that are native to each, or not native, but are really known from each of those starting points. And then, you know, cocktails, everything having an Italian ingredient in it, and, you know, something that kind of withstands the test of time or tells the story of time through a glass was something Amaro, and that's something that came out as a way to really give it a point of view on the back end of the meal, of finding some really great vintage Amari and highlighting Amari from all 20 regions of Italy with it. So it was really fun to be able to sort of come up with the overall theme, but then find different ways to connect back to it and storytell through the food, a glass of wine or a glass of Amari or a cocktail throughout the meal.
That's great. It's really got a very, I know you've been around that long with the reopening, but it feels like you do. The place feels like it hums and runs on history, yeah. Which is interesting because it's, as you said, the third iteration of this. Do you find yourself as a former beverage director and a huge cocktail fanatic? I mean, you are a cocktail junkie. Are you
just
able to
drink a lot? Is that why you're saying that, or are you just saying that because I like cocktails?
Both.
Okay.
Do you find yourself putting your hands in those things, or how hard is it to let go of letting somebody come up with a cocktail list or letting somebody pick all the wines that are on the list? Or are you involved?
Definitely involved. It's a very collaborative effort on all fronts. And that's with Mark, myself, Dustin, who really kind of leads the wine focus on that, with our wine director, Catherine, there. We start with kind of a picture frame and saying, what are we? And really clearly defining that. And then, you know, by having that, and we're all on the same page of determining what that narrative is, then really working with great, talented people that can take that and build on it. And while we all give feedback, ultimately putting great people in place to help build that and bring it to life is what, how we go about it. So, you know, on the cocktail front, you know, we all came up with the idea. And then actually our partner in Please Don't Tell is Jeff Bell, which is actually just down the street, actually on 8th Street. He helped come up with the original cocktail menu. And then each season we do a rollout. He actually works with the team of bartenders to come up with new cocktails to bring into the mix that really follow that point of view. And we all get to taste them, which is one of the fun parts of the job. And I can give feedback, but he can take that feedback and articulate it through cocktails much better than I can. And so it's doing that. Same thing on the wine front. It's really, you know, I think Catherine's done a great job of building on the initial program. And, you know, as it starts to evolve, now we do wine classes that tell that story as well for guests to join us and do so, and really kind of make it a unintimidating place to kind of be adventurous or to learn and have fun while you're learning about it.
What's your favorite cocktail you guys do? Harvey Wallbanger? Is that the one?
The Harvey Wallbanger? No, we don't have any Harvey Wallbangers on the menu. We actually just put on, playing off the classics, we just put on vintage Negronis and vintage Boulevardiers. So I happened to come across some spirits from the 60s and 70s. And so we did a big batch of them in these 3-liter bottles of Campari, and we call it the Amari Ferrari, and we've got the airbrushed license plate and everything, and you wheel it around the table and around the dining room and mix up the cocktails there. So that's been my latest fun discovery.
That has to sell a shitload. Playing. As soon as somebody sees that happen, I'm sure the next table's like, what's that? I mean, that's got to be.
It's more the person walking to the dining room going, vroom, vroom. That's what really, I think, sells it more than anything else.
With the Amari Ferrari?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
That's great. All right. So what are the restaurant projects are you working on right now? So you've got 1/5, and I just want people to get a scope of how insane you are.
No, I'm not insane. It's
a little bit.
So we're like a hospitality group with like 5 hospitality groups underneath us. So mm-hmm. I'm partnering with Mark at Respect Hospitality and Peasant and Restaurant Mark Forgione, which will be moving in July, probably, or June or July mm-hmm. of this year. So we're really excited about that. With Leah Cohen, a Pig and Cow, so Southeast Asian. And we have, hopefully a new project that we'll be able to talk about here in the next couple months. PDT. We're actually getting ready to come to your neck of the woods
That's right.
in Los Angeles. So working with Ludo Leflev on Petit Trois out there, a really great French bistro and some other exciting projects there with him as well. So it's fun to be able to play in all these different sandboxes and, you know, based out of New York, but starting to stretch beyond that and to venture into other markets as well. So it's been really great to work with our partners and get to learn them and understand their cultures and help them not just scale their restaurants, but scale the culture in the process as well.
Yeah, I don't know if people told you, but I get a kickback in LA. It's sort of standard. Oh, okay. So
good to know. I appreciate that, you naming that on the record here. So
yeah, two Harvey Wallbangers is pretty much what
Jason
I get.
Jason Rico. Exactly.
Yeah. When you open up a new restaurant, Jason Rico.
Yeah.
So this is great. I just want to take a couple seconds here and say how proud I am to have you in the fourth Somm movie, which I cannot believe is just came out of my mouth. And you know, should we announce our plans for the musical Somm 5? Are you excited about this?
Yeah, I can't wait. I've been trying my new dance routines, et cetera, and such. So it'll be a good one. Speaking of dance routines, what made me think of this?
This will be good.
This is how my mind works. Molly Shannon hosted Saturday Night Live the other night, and she was back, and she's 50, and she loves to kick, stretch, and kick. Anyway, another thing, I'm a big SNL fan, as I know you are.
Of course.
And I think actually Saturday Night Live started the same year that One Fifth started, and they used to hold their after parties here back in the day. And so as I was doing a little more kind of discovery, they actually would film one of the shorts. There was one called La Dolce Gilda. And so there's Gilda Radner. Yeah. It was inspired by a Fellini movie. And so we have some of the stills from that on the wall.
Was that filmed there? That was filmed at that building?
In the black
corner. And white one where they're all smoking.
Dan Aykroyd's in it. Yeah. You have John Belushi and you have the whole cast in there.
It's like real art film. Oh my God. We got to pull that for the video for this. Cause that is just the best.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool to hear that. Keith McNally was, that was his first job, I think, as an oyster shucker before he went on to do the Odeon. You know, we got a picture of Bill Murray and the patron saint of Campari from The Life Aquatic on there for our Negronis and such. So anyway, that was a roundabout way of back to you dancing and musicals. So,
well, it'll be you dancing. I'm directing. So
okay.
It'll be, Saab, it's amazing to catch up with you. And, you know, I look forward to when we're 60 talking about whatever Saab is releasing then. No, hopefully not.
Yeah, well, it's going to be, Vin Diesel will be in that one, and that'll be like the Fast and the Furious Somm 27 or something like that.
Yeah, the mix-up we never needed but always wanted.
Exactly, yeah.
Tokyo Swirl. All right, Saab, it's good to talk to you, bud. And everybody, if you're in New York, One Fifth has probably one of the best happy hours. Great cocktails, good pasta.
Nickel Negronis, that'll do it. That makes every hour happy hour.
Yeah, that'll definitely do it. All right, buddy, be safe. Thank you.
All right, talk to you later.
I want to thank everybody for listening. Don't forget, we have lots of great stuff coming on Somm TV. If you are a subscriber, you can watch this conversation with Sabato and I and see the property of One Fifth and everything they're doing there. Go to SommTV.com for a very special offer in celebration of our James Beard nomination. SommTV.com, use the code 50OFF, 50OFF. Also, let us know what you think. If you love this podcast, please give us a great review wherever you listen. And hit us up on social media. We love your ideas and we love to hear what you think we should cover. Talk to you all very soon. Drink something nice.